From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny.
Wasted on the oceans and upon our seas, fish full of mercury.
Coming up on Forum, we meet San Francisco physician Jane Hightower, who has come out strongly condemning the prevalence and dangers of the mercury content that's in the fish we eat. She's the author of Diagnosis, Mercury, Money, Politics, and Poison. And we'll hear from her as well as from a scientist who disputes much of what she has to say about the effects of mercury in the fish we consume. Forum is next with your calls and emails after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. About 6 tons of mercury enters the environment each year, roughly a third of it generated by power stations and coal fires, and much of it settles into the oceans and enters the food chain. There has been much concern about the amounts of mercury in the fish we eat, and some, like San Francisco physician Jane Hightower, who believes government agencies are failing to protect the public from high mercury content in seafood, have put out strong warnings, as Dr. Hightower does in her book, Diagnosis, Mercury, Money, Politics, and Power. Recently, environmental officials from 140 countries and the United States, reversing its non-involvement policy from the Bush administration, agreed to a treaty to control mercury emissions, and the FDA is considering modifying its policy that women and children should limit the amount of fish they eat, since the health benefits derived from eating fish now appear to the FDA to outweigh the perils of mercury poisoning. So in this Forum Hour, we're going to focus on mercury and seafood. And in addition to Dr. Jane Hightower, we'll be speaking to Dr. Nicholas Ralston, a research scientist whose work supports the FDA's potential shift. In the interest of balance, we asked the National Fisheries Institute to join our discussion today. They declined, but they directed us to the work of Dr. Ralston. We also invited the FDA and the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, who also declined. I want to welcome Jane Hightower. Good morning to you.
Thank you for having me, Michael.
Glad to have you. Let's begin with your story, which takes us back to the year 2000. Patients showing all kinds of symptoms and difficulties, and suddenly the common thread was they ate a lot of fish.
Correct. There was more to that. Is it some of them ate a lot of fish and their mercury wasn't elevated, and some ate not that much fish and the mercury was elevated. So it came down to what type of fish and how much mercury content was in it.
And what did you do about exploring what kind of fish? I mean, how did you go about that?
Well, there are some websites, such as the FDA website, that tells the mercury levels in fish, and also the EPA. The good thing about the internet is you can find information. The bad thing is you can get bad information, so you have to sort through this. So essentially, I really looked towards the Public Health Department, EPA, and FDA, and really couldn't get clear answers as to how much fish, how much mercury was too much.
You found them coming up wanting in that vein, but also in kind of contradictoriness about what was harmful, too, didn't you?
Correct. And so I knew that I needed to sort this out. And the main thing is I wanted to find out whether symptoms such as fatigue, headache, troubles thinking, muscle and joint ache, stomach upset, was from the mercury. And when I had people stop consuming mercury, their symptoms went away. Recovery hasn't been a total 100%, but nearly 100%. And in looking at this, it was clear that anecdotally I had a problem. Somehow this issue has been muddied over the years.
Well, you mentioned some of the symptoms, and in fact, the seafood industry, I was joking before I went in there, has made you, I thought, enemy number one, but maybe enemy number two now, and there have been some pretty strong hit pieces about your work and about you personally, and what I gleaned from this was that one of the criticisms boils down to thinking or somehow concluding that a lot of what many people feel are phantom symptoms, like upset stomachs and headaches and all of those kinds of things, are related to mercury poisoning.
Well, they're not phantom. These are the lesser symptoms of methylmercury toxicity or lesser Minamata. And in fact, when I went back into the historical papers and Anderson trial, the trials that set our standards, these symptoms had all been reported before, but fishing industry and other industries really balked at having these symptoms included into the discussion on mercury toxicity profiles.
There is an argument, and I suppose we'll hear it from Dr. Ralston, that mercury can obviously have damages. That would be quickly conceded, neurological damages, and there have been warnings about pregnant women and so forth using eating a lot of fish and harm that can be done, risk of coronary disease and so forth, strokes as well. But that those are far outweighed, and this is the way the argument is framed, far outweighed by the omega and the protein and all of the good benefits that accrue from eating fish.
That has not been proven. And there's never been a blinded, placebo-controlled trial of giving humans methylmercury to find out what happens over time. And so if I tried to do that, it would probably be laughed at, and you wouldn't get the ethics committees to approve it. So essentially, whenever they look at risk-benefit, there are other factors you have to weigh into. And no, the risk of mercury at a certain threshold outweighs the benefits. And the threshold is what we're looking at. So we don't know what that threshold is, and we think it's very low.
But we do also know, as you pointed out, that different fish have different thresholds and different levels of neurotoxic poison and all of that sort of thing. In fact, tuna steak is a higher level than tuna, for example, I found out in my reading. I didn't know that. Or shark and swordfish and king mackerel, these are bad. It depends to some extent on the fish and where you buy the fish, doesn't it?
Well, one of the things, as far as tuna goes, what I think you meant to say is that it depends on the size of the tuna, how long lived it is. And the canned tuna, there's varying levels of mercury in the cans, albacore having three times more mercury than chunk light, although the fishing industry is allowed to put the large surplus fish into the chunk light cans, so you can intermittently get an elevated level. But yes, there's a varying degree of omega-3 fatty acid content of fish, and there's a varying degree of PCBs, and also with mercury and other toxicants. But what the FDA does is they not only enforce the upper limit of what is considered safe in mercury amounts in fish, they don't enforce it, and they don't warn either. And so you can't have both. So there's no real ranking of fish right now. So you can go to the grocery store and choose one fish that might have high omega-3s, low mercury, which benefits outweigh the risk. You can choose another fish that has low omegas and high mercury, where the mercury risk outweighs the benefit.
There was a warning, though, for childbearing women or women of childbearing years, I should say, and pregnant women and nursing mothers and so forth. And now, I guess the FDA is talking about taking that off the books.
Well, the people who were the main writers of this FDA current last-minute, under-the-wire report were people who have been dealing with this for several decades and are quite embedded with the fishing industry. And when I looked at the report that made it to the Office of Management and Budget, on page 18, they still heavily relied on data from Iraq, which I found out was...
Wait, that goes back to World Health Organization 1971 thing, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. And in Diagnosis Mercury of my book, I researched this Iraqi poisoning. My book is the first one to really question even the intent of that poisoning, whether it had a malicious intent. And I interviewed the man who was the Ba'ath Party man involved in this poisoning, and he admitted to me he didn't give all the data to all the researchers for
this
political
was Saddam's
reasons.
Man, basically.
This was Dr. Sadoun al-Tikriti, the Sadoun tribe being the most loyal of the Tikritis, and he admitted to me, no, he didn't give all the data to the WHO, and no, he wouldn't rely on this poisoning to serve as any policy making.
We're talking again with Dr. Jane Hightower, who has an internal medicine practice here in San Francisco, and she's the author of Diagnosis, Mercury, Money, Politics, and Poison. There have been so many FDA studies, and then you get these conflicting figures between the FDA and the EPA.
Correct, and the EPA was never sued over this issue, so they are free to look at the literature and science as it comes to them, where the FDA was sued in 1977. And that one part per million allowable in fish of mercury was all derived from the Iraqi data, 100% derived from the Iraqi data, that which was bogus data. And today the FDA has not looked back at whether they got indeed correct data. And so this is what my beef is, essentially.
Well, let's get to your beef. I mean, what would you like warnings to consumers, or what kind of government warnings would you like?
I think they probably need to rank the fish as far as omega-3 content, you know, mercury and other contaminants, and then see what the market will bear. If they're not going to enforce the one part per million limit, which they're not, then they need to tell the people what are the fish that, when eaten on a regular basis, or can even be eaten on a regular basis. There's some fish you should not eat every day because a one part per million limit does not protect against the high-end consumer. It just protects against people who hardly eat fish.
But we need tougher restrictions on mercury.
Absolutely. And we need to look at all the science and not have the waters muddied by the paid conclusions of industry-funded researchers.
Talking again with Dr. Jane Hightower, and I'm going to bring Nicholas Ralston, into this discussion. He is selenium and mercury researcher at the University of North Dakota Energy and Environmental Research Center, and was recommended directly to us by the seafood industry. Nicholas Ralston, that would make people suspicious right on the face of it, I guess, wouldn't it?
Well, good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
I'm happy to be here with you this morning because we need to improve the public understanding of this issue because it's extremely important. Everybody has children, and we all want our children to do the best possible. The funding that I receive is primarily EPA. I actually lead a health effects research group at our research center that is exclusively EPA-funded. So although I think it's kind of popular with people to assume that if you get funding from one group, you're going to find one set of data. If you get funding from another group, you're going to get a different set of data. That's a really poor understanding of how research proceeds. Any researcher that's worth his salt is going to perform the study and perform it with as little bias as possible. Doing it any other way, you'll never get funded again. The studies that Jane is mentioning, many of them are NIH-funded, and it's very hard to say NIH has an axe to grind.
Well, let me get
EPA.
Let me get your position here, though, because essentially it's very much opposite what we heard from Dr. Hightower as far as the healthy part of fish, the omega-3, the fatty acids and so forth, protein, as benefits outweigh the dangers. And this is largely, I think, in your judgment, because of selenium?
Yes, it is. Selenium physiology is unfamiliar to most Americans. Unfortunately, even most medical schools leave it out of their training programs. So it's really easy to understand why many people are unaware of even the basic aspects of selenium metabolism. Selenium is actually present in all forms of life that have brains. They need selenium-dependent enzymes to protect their brains from oxidative damage. Now, although people that are studying amino acid metabolism believe there's only 20 amino acids, there's actually 22. Two of the amino acids that are not even taught in medical schools are selenium-containing amino acids. And one of them in particular is absolutely essential for making enzymes that you cannot live without. Now, selenium has to be present in order to make that amino acid, and that amino acid has to be present in order to protect the brain and make a number of processes that are required for healthy development and healthy physiology functional. Now, the thing that we've been finding recently is that mercury has a huge affinity for selenium, a million times higher than its affinity for sulfur, which everyone had always thought that mercury bound sulfur in the body, and it does, but it binds selenium far more specifically. And when it does, it inhibits these enzymes. In fact, the definition of the molecular mechanism of mercury toxicity is that it is a highly specific, irreversible, selenium-dependent enzyme inhibitor.
And you've also found empirically, I believe, that selenium actually boosts children's intelligence quotient?
Well, no, that's not actually my studies. This is studies from Denmark, United Kingdom, and a series of the most recent, biggest and best studies from the United States. These studies are all coinciding in confirming that increasing ocean fish consumption during pregnancy boosts child IQ, improves maternal health, and a number of other things. Now, the mercury-selenium ratio is huge to understand in this regard, though, because ocean fish might be rich in selenium, but freshwater fish are not.
Yeah, that's an important distinction that you've made, I know, between ocean and freshwater fish. But the idea that selenium is actually boosting IQ and having a salutary effect on health is really, in many ways, behind the new proposal that's coming out of the FDA?
To some extent. I mean, omega-3s are very rich in seafood, too. Like Jane was saying, no one is ever going to do a study where you just give somebody methylmercury. That would be irresponsible. But ocean fish consumption, all of the biggest studies, I mean, we're talking 25,000 moms, 12,000 moms. These studies are finding that the more fish mothers eat, the higher their IQs of their children. A study recently done at the World Trade Center exposure cohort found that up to 10 IQ points of benefit to child IQ followed increased amounts of seafood consumption by the mothers. And it's all, the whole issue, all of the controversy makes sense if you think about the issue from the perspective of mercury-selenium relationships.
Let me get Dr. Hightower to comment on that relationship. Jane Hightower?
Well, number one, it's been proven that in research, when funding goes to the researcher, that the researcher more often than not favors the funder. So that's number one. That's been shown many times. But aside from that, we know that there's an interaction with mercury and selenium, and this is not new. This is, in fact, I talk about it in the book, where it originally came from. And it was sort of the industry's way of finding a do-all repellent for mercury. And they've been trying to prove this for decades. Now, there's some good work that's been done by Dr. Ralston. But it's the conclusion that I worry about, because the conclusion is that methylmercury interferes with the good effects of selenium, not the selenium repels mercury toxicity. And selenium is not the only pathway that is affected by methylmercury. Methylmercury penetrates every cell in the body. It's involved in other pathways. And regardless, there's still people who eat too much mercury and are getting ill from it. That's the bottom line.
Well, it's interesting, Dr. Ralston, because I think you started out agreeing with Dr. Hightower, at least in terms of the way she looked at mercury and its toxicity.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, everybody that enters the issue, I mean, the basic premise of toxicology is that the dose makes the poison. So everybody starts with that basic assumption that more exposure is going to definitely be associated with greater harms. So it was a rather large surprise to many scientists in this issue. In fact, I know of scientists that did not publish their results because they were finding beneficial effects from increasing fish consumption, and they were saying, well, gee, it's not supposed to work that way. So they would go back to the research and continue it, and finally, after finding that a lot of other people are seeing the same things, they're putting out their research, and their research is confirming that increasing ocean fish consumption is beneficial.
I got to tell you, though, when
the alternative.
I don't know if you heard my introduction, but I'm just talking as a layperson now. You know, I'm not a scientist like the two people I'm talking to here. But you think about heavy metal, and you think about what comes out of a coal-fired power plant. It doesn't necessarily seem to, how shall we say, be beneficial to one's health, at least on the face of things.
Absolutely not. The situation we have is kind of like the blind man with the elephant. If you're looking at one end of the mercury-selenium ratio, you're going to find harm. And there are foods that contain more mercury than selenium, and they will be terrible for a mother to eat. They'll cause harmful effects even to grown men. For instance, a study done in Finland, one of the most selenium-deficient nations on Earth, it's the only nation that has to fertilize its soil with selenium, they found that the freshwater fish being consumed by people that had cardiovascular risk factors, the mercury exposure made their heart conditions worsen dramatically, and it's because the mercury-selenium ratios were so bad. And so that's exactly what would be predicted based on the mercury-selenium ratio. But if you have selenium-rich foods, they're also rich in omega-3s and many other nutrients, so it's not exclusively selenium. But the issue is that increasing ocean fish consumption, which has many times more selenium than mercury, is not harmful, but eating foods that have a lot of mercury and relatively small amounts of selenium is harmful. And so we need a more sophisticated understanding of how to quantitate risk. Like Jane was saying, we really should not have consumers having to worry about what they're buying off the store shelves. We need a ranking, just like Jane mentions, but it has to be more sophisticated than just measuring the mercury.
Now, I mean, you're all for that, Jane Hightower.
Oh, absolutely. I've been saying that all along. And because I think that the problem is if they test every fish, which they have the technology to do so, is, you know, you just hate to see those fish being wasted or having some other third world country get all the high mercury fish. So there's an ethical discussion behind that, too. So now we're saying, well, if you every once in a while eat the high mercury fish, does that cause harm? And what we're discovering is that the dose doesn't always make the poison. Is it's just like the bee sting. You know, it takes 1,200 bees to kill an average human, but every once in a while you have a human that dies with just one sting. And it's not a dose effect. It's a body's reaction to it. And I think there's other pathways other than selenium that we have to look at in methylmercury also. And the bottom line is the FDA currently has a warning that is too strict for some fish and too lenient for others. If they had a ranking system, then some people could actually eat more fish with a safety level.
They should have a ranking system. You go to Monterey Bay's website and you got a ranking system in terms of which fish are the most endangered. And, you know, people have been following eating habits to some extent based on that, people who are concerned about those species. But your book is also a real indictment of the industry for covering up what you pretty much see as mass poisonings.
Correct. And it's to the high-end consumer, and it's going to affect people who like to eat fish on a regular basis that accumulate their mercury. They look at the heart healthy label on the fish and they say, hey, I should be able to eat this every day. And if they don't choose the right fish, then it can cause harm. And that's the argument, because the FDA has not done anything to protect those consumers who truly enjoy their fish. I enjoy fish. My patients enjoy fish. And I've been able to reduce their mercury levels by switching over to the lower mercury fish.
So we're in agreement, at least, on the fact that we need stricter limits on neurotoxins. We need a public policy that makes mercury dangers public and makes the sense of what's more dangerous more real. But I want to get back, Dr. Ralston, to something you said, which is freshwater fish, beware, huh?
Yeah, the more sophisticated way of evaluating risk or benefits, we have to also be paying careful attention to not warning women away from eating foods that are beneficial to the IQs of their babies, because obviously 10 IQ points of benefit is something we don't want our mothers to be losing. That's a huge issue. We want mothers to be eating seafoods that will benefit their children. What we are proposing in a new seafood safety criteria, it's called the selenium health benefit value. It relates the amount of mercury to the amount of selenium, and this has been this ratio effect has been found to be directly proportional to harm and benefit, because if you have more selenium than mercury, that's beneficial seafood. The best analogy for understanding the mercury issue is to think about selenium like money. If you have an absolute need for selenium to stay alive, just like you need a certain amount of income to cover your living expenses. But mercury is like an unexpected bill that arrives in the mail. If your mail this morning included unexpected bills for $500 that you didn't think were coming, your level of concern would be entirely dependent upon your financial status. If your income was only $100 a day, $500 in unexpected bills would be extremely bad news. But it's five times more than your income. But if your income was $1,000 a day, it'd be less of a worry because it's only half of your income.
All right. On that note of economics, we are coming up on a break here, and I want to give out the phone number. I know many of you would like to join us, and if you do have questions or comments, join us now. It's toll-free, whether you're listening on radio, Internet, or a SiriusXM satellite, 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls, and again, you can call us now at 866-733-6786 or join us by email, forum@kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking this hour with Jane M. Hightower, MD, author of Diagnosis, Mercury, Money, Politics, and Poison. I said power before, a strange slip, but I misspoke myself. Nicholas Ralston, also with us from the University of North Dakota, is a selenium and mercury researcher there with the Energy and Environmental Research Center. And We are going to go to your calls and emails here forthwith as we discuss the dangers of mercury. And what we're hearing from Dr. Ralston, in large part, Dr. Hightower, is, you know, when you look at the scale of things, the advantages, again, of selenium far outweigh whatever the dangers might be where mercury is concerned. But a couple of caveats from you, I guess, on that score. One is lack of human trials, and also maybe people should remember the tobacco industry?
Yes. In fact, there's a paper that just recently came out that said that selenium inhibits the toxicity effects of nicotine. So it doesn't mean we're going to go out and start doing more nicotine, because there's other effects from methylmercury that selenium does not cover. And this is a very old theory brought up by industry-funded researchers to find some sort of repellent and a way to keep their methylmercury or high methylmercury fish on the market to tell people that it's okay to consume. And there's two ways to look at it, that, selenium inhibits the methylmercury toxicity, or you can say, well, methylmercury inhibits the good effects of selenium.
Now, what about that, Dr. Ralston?
Well, the reason why selenium does have effects that have been noted in many, many studies is because it is such a potent antioxidant. Oxidative damage is a huge risk. I mean, anybody that lives where there's oxygen is at risk of oxidative damage. So anytime there is a case of oxidative damage, increasing selenium will improve your protection. However, it's definitely not the case that it's something that's brought up by the seafood industry. It's been known since 1967 from studies in Europe that selenium completely prevented lethal effects of mercury. Animals that were not given a selenium-rich diet were 100% killed. Animals that were given a selenium-rich diet all survived. It wasn't the seafood industry that found that. I mean, this is 40-year-old data. And actually, in the 70s, selenium physiologists brought all of this up, and that's how come a lot of the concern diminished in the 70s. And those were people that were not funded by seafood industries or anybody else. They were selenium physiology folks that understood the issue.
Jane Hightower.
Yeah, no, actually, I counter that, because I found in the Anderson trial under sworn testimony how this sort of came about as far as selenium and methylmercury. That was the connection that was made by Marvin Friedman. And during the trial on cross-examination, it was found out that a lot of his hypothesis was just a judgment thing on his part, and that actually the rat experiment he did at the time, that he so said that selenium protected against methylmercury toxicity, at the time he didn't even know if selenium was in the swordfish given to the rats. So it had a very shaky start. Yes, we know selenium is good for the human body in certain amount. Too much is not good for the human body. But to say that selenium is the do-all repellent for methylmercury would be a dangerous message. So I think that essentially on the bottom line, have humans who are affected. And most of these selenium studies are done with methylmercury on rats. And you can't ask a rat if they have insomnia, a headache, or troubles thinking. And rats can't even vomit, let alone tell you they have an upset stomach. So the bottom line is I had people who have high methylmercury who were ill and couldn't work, and they got better when they stopped. And this has been reported before.
Nicholas Ralston, we're going to have to go to our callers shortly, but what about the idea that Dr. Hightower has put forward here, that we don't have enough in the way of human experiments to really back this up, and that it began perhaps on shaky ground?
Well, it didn't begin on shaky ground. The study she's mentioning was in the 70s. The study I mentioned was 10 years before that, and was based on the later study was based on the 1967 study that found the complete prevention of lethal effects of mercury. However, the human studies, they're all virtually human studies of mercury-selenium relationship. For instance, in the Faroe Islands, which the EPA currently bases our warnings against fish consumption on the Faroe Islands results. Now, the Faroe Islands, 95% of the mercury exposure in the Faroes came from eating pilot whale meat, which is a very unusual food to call seafood. And it contains five times more mercury than selenium. So exactly as expected, there were some adverse effects.
Stay away from whale meat, basically.
Yeah, don't eat whale meat.
But that's not seafood, it's mammals.
Yeah, but that's what we currently base our warnings to women about whether or not they should eat ocean fish. Uh-huh. We base it on a study of whether or not pilot whale meat was bad for you, and that's not good science.
Yeah. In fact, what I wanted to say is whales are often thought to be big fish and they're mammals. But you also advise strongly against eating shark, for example, don't you?
Yeah, certain large shark are just as bad as pilot whale meat. The higher-end predators are very much that way. But my major issue of concern is that we're warning people away from eating ocean fish that are beneficial, and we're tending right now to ignore the unrecognized risks in freshwater fish, where there might be many times more mercury than selenium. In fact, I'm working with a number of groups that are finding that exact thing in freshwater fish, but it's unrecognized.
I am going to go to calls and emails here, but what about farm-raised fish from your perspective?
I think they can be very cautious, and I think most of the people that are doing it are trying to be cautious. Certainly, it's very easy to control the mercury inputs, and you can definitely selenium enrich the fish. So the concerns about high mercury relative to selenium can be addressed and should be addressed. I'm sure that the people that are in the industry trying to raise the fish properly will be doing that.
Well, let me bring our callers in. And Arthur, you're first up. Good morning.
Thank you, and thank you for the show. I have the question that comes to mind right away that as far as no one's bringing up is, why not simply just take a selenium supplement and address selenium intake that way, and we just avoid eating fish, you know, or limit eating fish tremendously until we just simply know more about it.
Well, what about that, Nicholas Ralston?
Certainly taking supplements is done, but generally nutritionists are moving more and more towards whole foods being a healthier way to go. We know that the beneficial effects in the New York study, where they had up to the 10 IQ points of benefit, were from the entire fish. So it would be difficult to say were the benefits from increased selenium intake, increased omega-3 intake. Vitamin D is very rich in fish. So we don't have data about whether or not the supplements would be proper. But the issue, I think it's whether or not seafood is safe, and it's looking more and more like all of the studies are saying that eating ocean fish is not causing the adverse effects that had even just 2 years ago been thought to be the case.
Well, certainly Dr. Hightower thinks it's the case still. Do you recommend supplements for your patients in lieu of, for example, eating fish?
No. In fact, one of the things is that you don't have to get your omega-3s just from fish. So I'm not trying to push a product. And so there's other ways to get omega-3 fatty acids. There are many people who are allergic to fish and never eat it, and they have healthy kids and long lives, and their kids are smart too. So, you know, I think that, number one, we have to have a variety of food. Giving too much selenium can cause toxicity, and there's different types of selenium compounds. So, no, I wouldn't rely on the pharmaceutical industry or, you know, people to tell us what selenium is to eat. And the other thing is that he just said it, that we don't know how much selenium can counter the effects of methylmercury, because, as I said again, there's never been a human trial to really look at these ratios and to see what happens over the long term. So it's very risky to just say, just because you see it in an experiment on a rat, somehow it counters, that this is going to then therefore blanket the whole population. The other thing is, if you look at the Seychelles, who has high selenium diet, they still have very high coronary artery disease risk. And it's still number one killer in their nation. And they're the highest of mercury, probably the highest in selenium and highest in omega-3s. So go figure.
We'll take more calls. Stephen, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi there. As I understand it, the mercury levels in Japan and Hong Kong are many times higher than they are in the U.S., and I just wondered if your guest could comment on that. Certainly, these regions are showing very high test scores on the standardized testing when they do comparative studies.
What about what we know from, I mean, Japanese are eating sushi all the time, aren't they, Dr. Hightower? You
know? Well, it's interesting because they have other recommendations. In fact, they intermittently have high mercury levels as a population, just like we do. And they are having problems with learning disorders just as we do. It depends on how you work the numbers. But they consider your everyday eating fish to be less than 0.3 part per million. And we don't have any recommendations like that. So the Japanese right now are having a hard time. They have a little Minamata going right now with people eating dolphin meat. Some of the dolphin is very high, these mammals, very high in mercury. And And so, no, there is a problem. In fact, some of the largest of the symptom profiles that I was interested in, because I'm looking at the lesser symptoms of mercury toxicity, those studies were done in Japan, and it showed that those who have higher mercury levels as a population had more people coming forward with various and sundry symptoms than those with a lower mercury level.
Again, Jane Hightower's book is Diagnosis, Mercury, Money, Politics, and Poison. And Dominic, welcome. You're on the air.
Hello. I was wondering if it was too late for me to get those 10 IQ points.
I can have people swigging selenium here.
Unfortunately, Fred, well, I think the bulk of the benefit happens during prenatal development. And I am concerned that it's possible that some of our lower test scores in the United States might be because we do have so much lower seafood consumption. I mean, the New York study showed it. All of the large studies are showing it. And really, in all of these studies, the mercury-selenium exposure, we know, and we know that in all cases where if they're not eating pilot whale or not eating large shark, they're getting selenium-rich relative to mercury foods. We've analyzed all of the fish pretty much, and all of them, aside from a very few unique examples, are selenium-rich relative to mercury. So the selenium health benefit values that I've mentioned, you know, probably should be incorporated, are generally going to be positive for ocean fish. It's just a question of how positive. The higher, the better. But freshwater fish are that big issue, and dolphins and whales should be avoided.
And once again, you can join us here toll-free if you have some thoughts or if you would like to contribute to the discussion, or any questions or comments are welcome. It's 866-733-6786, or send an email to forum at kqed.org. And let me go to some of your emails. Here's Jackie, who says, does Dr. Hightower know of any evaluation of mercury levels in sea vegetables and seaweed?
Yeah, there have been some seaweed, some Japanese studies, and I don't have the numbers offhand, but, you know, some of these things, also in fish meal, you can concentrate mercury, but sometimes the FDA does have good website on whether that contains mercury, so I would direct that person to there.
Here's another listener who says, most fish with high levels of mercury also overfished, threatened, or endangered. Why eat an endangered species and expose yourself to health risks when so much healthy food is available to us? Is this what you tell your patients?
Yes, that's exactly right. I say to rotate your poisons. And I'm not trying to push any product one over the other. I'm not trying to push ocean fish, tuna in a can, or anything like that. I think you have to eat a variety of food. And some of these studies that show that you know, omega-3 fatty acids were beneficial, there was one out of Europe that the man doing the study placed the higher mercury content fish consumers in with the low mercury content fish consumers. And what that did was it didn't really tell us what the mercury effect was. So it just said omega-3s are good, mercury is bad. And I think that's the bottom line. And why risk eating mercury with the hope and a prayer that selenium's going to protect you? And, oh, I hope I'm eating enough of it.
Do you agree with Dr. Ralston, though, that it's, if you're going to eat fish, it's much preferable to have ocean fish as opposed to freshwater?
No, I think that we need more information to really make that claim. And but I will agree that that data is very important for Dr. Ralston to continue to produce to give us some insight so that clinicians such as myself will be able to make that decision. I mean, I think this is wonderful work that Dr. Ralston does on telling us what the selenium content is. But there's different kinds of selenium. And again, I would caution anybody to just go ahead and eat a high-mercury fish just because there might be some selenium in the fish, too.
Well, let me go to some more of your emails. Here's a listener who writes, it all makes a vegetarian diet look more attractive. Another listener writes, I have a 4-year-old and an 8-month-old. During my first pregnancy 5 years ago, my doctors told me at first that I should eat 2 cans of tuna fish per week. When I was 5 months pregnant, suddenly the recommendation changed and they said I shouldn't eat any tuna fish. During my pregnancy last year, the recommendation had changed again and they said I could eat 1 can of tuna every 2 weeks. This was confusing and distressing as, of course, I wanted to do what was best for my developing babies and certainly did not want to poison them. Now I just take the fish oil pills to get my omega-3s, which hopefully will get into my breast milk as I am still nursing. It's too confusing to try to decipher all the contradictory stories I hear in the media. Catherine writes, I'm enjoying your program today and happy to see that this topic is gaining mainstream attention. I've spent the last 8 years dealing with symptoms of mercury toxicity. I struggle with the symptoms that Dr. Hightower described, only to have several doctors tell me that there was nothing wrong with me. I finally found a physician who put all of my symptoms together and figured out it was due to mercury toxicity. After a couple years detoxing and chelation, I feel like I have my life back. I can think clearly now. My hair has grown back even better than it was, and my weight is back to normal. I feel that my exposure was due to a high intake of fish, as I was a vegetarian and ate fish. A lot of fresh tuna, canned tuna, swordfish, etc. I now avoid large fish and have started to eat organic chicken, turkey, and pork. Thank you for having the program and helping those that suffer from these symptoms understand that they are not imagining their symptoms. And Denise writes, I had a yearly physical and they checked my mercury level. The test came back at 0.8 and they want me to come back for another evaluation. I try to search the web to look for more information on high levels and what the benchmark is and couldn't find any information. How do I determine what is a safe level? I eat a lot of fish and only buy low mercury fish, but I do eat a lot of sushi. Well, that's at the heart of course, Jane Hightower, what you're so concerned about.
Yeah, if you want me to comment.
The information isn't out there, really.
Well, the one part per million, a lot of the mercury researchers even didn't realize that one part per million limit on the amount of mercury allowed in fish was derived considering the Iraqi data that said that a human can tolerate blood levels of mercury up to 400. And there is no research today that would support that. So we need to really go back to the drawing board on this one. And the one part per million is not protective of the public who's going to eat fish every day. And you should do what some of the other fish-consuming countries do, and that's say to keep your everyday eating fish at the lowest possible mercury level, and she'll be much better off.
Nicholas Ralston, I need to ask you, because I think it's implied by some of the criticism we've heard from Dr. Hightower, just how certain are you in the judgments you're extrapolating from the research you've done, or is there a lot more research that needs to be done?
Well, you'll never get a scientist to say that there isn't a need for more research, but on this issue, there is actually getting to be fairly solid, I mean extremely solid. I shouldn't characterize it as only fairly. The evidence is that all of the human studies, and we've been doing mercury-selenium analyses on the most recent human studies, we're finding that the benefits of ocean fish are tremendous. If there are adverse effects, we're only seeing that in studies where they're eating foods that have more mercury than selenium.
Forgive me, but what other benefits in addition to boosting IQ prenatally are you finding?
Okay, maternal, postnatal, the depression circumstances, length of gestation, other factors in child health at birth, increased birth weight, et cetera, that more or less denote improved health of the child. I think IQ is huge, so I kind of focus on that. But the adverse effects are directly proportional to having more mercury than selenium. Beneficial effects all seem to fit with having more selenium than mercury. And so what we need is a sophisticated way of understanding this issue that doesn't just measure the mercury. That's like having an accountant that tells you he's going to balance your books by only counting how many checks you wrote. That's rather uninformed.
You like that fiscal analogy, don't you?
Well, it fits the best because eating ocean fish is like having an income of $10,000. That $500 surprise bill is not going to bother you. But in the Faroes, where they were getting $500 in bills, their income was only $100. So, I mean, it's obvious there would be more harm. All of the harmful effects of mercury seem to line up, and I disagree that we haven't got human studies because all of the recent human studies are looking at mercury-selenium relationships, and they're unified in finding beneficial effects coincide with increasing seafood consumption, and these seafoods are selenium-rich relative to mercury.
All right, we're going to bring more callers aboard here. Mel, join us. Thanks for waiting.
Oh, sure. I think Jane knows me fairly well. I am the president and CEO of a company, and it's all we do is test seafood for mercury. That's our entire mandate. To give you some idea about how embedded we are in the process, according to the FDA website, they've tested about 5,000 samples since 1978. We've tested 150,000 samples in the last 2.5 years. So we know the landscape. We've also gone out and looked and seen how mercury levels in seafood compare to what the FDA claims is in the fish you're eating, and the disconnect is startling. The other thing to think about is the FDA screening process is non-existent. They give the perception that this one part per million is an action level and that the government is able to remove fish from a seafood counter that has over that level. But in reality, there's no enforcement whatsoever. And in fact, the seafood industry clearly knows how to circumvent any kind of testing protocol that the FDA has in the mercury issue. In fact, it's so well known that about a year ago, the New York Times published an article explaining on how the seafood industry gets over the FDA testing requirements.
Mel, excuse me, do you check other foods for mercury?
No. Well, our machinery is capable of it, only we've dedicated ourselves to the seafood industry.
Oh. Would you seafood be willing business. To start analyzing selenium? Because that would be a huge contribution to the issue.
Well, our machinery is capable of that, but quite frankly, I'm a little bit concerned about putting too much weight on the selenium issue. First of all, I've got to tell you that, you know, we have tracked the industry's approach to this issue, particularly NFI and related lobbying groups. And quite clearly, this selenium situation and tying it to ocean fish, I mean, that's where the money is. And I would look at any researcher, with all due respect, Dr. Alston, I'd look at any research that was even partially funded by NFI or the fishing industry, because we have seen through blogs and trade press as to what the industry does on the mercury issue. I mean, before it was selenium, it was something else. I mean, the seafood industry has always taken the position that mercury is not a concern, and today's flavor is selenium, tomorrow's flavor will be something else. But the fact remains that it is detrimental to the seafood industry, according to NFI, to mention mercury as a cause of any problem, physiological problem.
Now, Mel, I thank you for your call, and we'll go to more calls in just a moment here. I want to look at some of the emails that have just come in here. This is a listener who writes, is Dr. Hightower recommending not to eat fish ever? I wonder what happened to the people who ate fish from all these years.
Oh, no, I never said that. In fact, I eat fish myself, and it's probably why I'm so involved in this, is because I do want to make sure that people enjoy the food they enjoy, but everything in moderation, as I say, rotate your poisons. But I think that there's fish and then there's fish, and the fish need a rating. And to say that just ocean fish is good for you because it has selenium is way too broad of a recommendation, because ocean fish has a quite varying amount of methylmercury and, if, as Ralston said, is selenium.
Exactly.
And so you don't want to just say, okay, just eat it all. Because what I had people doing is eating the highest mercury content fish sold in the commercial market without any informed consent at the point of sale.
Yeah, Dr. Ralston, that caller Mel and the comments are just made by Dr. Hightower deserve a response from you.
Yes. Well, as Dr. Hightower pointed out, the amounts of mercury vary, the amounts of selenium vary. That's how come the selenium health benefit value is so important. It gives you the actual molar ratios of the mercury and selenium and the absolute amounts, all wrapped up into a single number, that the consumer can look at that number, and the more positive it is, the more beneficial it's likely to be. If it's negative at all, okay, that's harmful. And, of course, the more negative, the more harmful. And that tracks exactly with all of the human studies. That's what I keep emphasizing. The human studies completely agree from the perspective of mercury-selenium relationships. They only disagree if you're only looking at the mercury. But that's like the accountant only looking at how many checks you wrote rather than your income.
Well, here's a listener who says, the answer, sardines, high omega-3s and D, low in mercury because they're low in the food chain. Let me go to more of our callers. And Jason, join us. Good morning.
Yes, hi. I was wondering about the recent studies I'd heard about oatmeal having a high mercury content.
You know about that, Dr. Hightower?
No, it doesn't have a high mercury content. It has a measurable mercury content because the process of high fructose corn syrup use the mercury cell chloralkali mechanism to give the chemicals involved with the processing of high fructose corn syrup, and that got into the food. So the whole point of that paper was to stop the polluters from continuing to use chloralkali with the mercury cell and also not use it for food. It gets into trace levels, but that's much less levels than what we're seeing in the fish that Dr. Ralston and I have been talking about today.
Well, are you optimistic about this deal that's just been consummated a few weeks ago, 140 nations signing on, including the United States, which had been pretty much away from this sort of cooperation, a treaty.
Yes, that's wonderful, because essentially what's happening worldwide is, as long as we use mercury and we continue to dig it up, it's going to continue to get into our lakes and streams and our oceans, and so we should keep it to where it lies right now. And the other issue that is frightening to me is that because there's mercury used for legitimate uses throughout the world, that there's a lot of black market mercury winding up in the hands of miners. And it's very cheap still. And those miners are really devastating areas in South America and Africa and other poor countries using it to extract gold and silver. And, you know, we can't allow that to happen.
That's an area that Dr. Hightower and I agree on completely. Any food where you're, like oatmeal even, depending upon what the level of mercury is, I haven't looked at that data, but if it's going to have any possibility of having more mercury in it than selenium, that increases the risk tremendously. And any time that you're being exposed to mercury and don't have adequate supplies of selenium to counteract it, the risk is far greater than our current regulatory advisories indicate. And the issue is going to be even huger in other parts of the world. The United States is very rich in selenium, but most of the continent of Africa is very low. So mercury exposures there would have highly adverse effects. Even in the United States, we know that the freshwater fish are having higher mercury than selenium in areas where selenium is poor. So this risk is worldwide, and it has to be addressed with this awareness.
Well, now that I got a point of strong agreement from the two of you, I think it may be the opportunity to conclude. I want to thank you both. Thanks, Nicholas Ralston, who joined us again from the University of North Dakota and is a selenium and mercury researcher there with the Energy and Environmental Research Center. Appreciate your being with us this morning.
Very happy to be here.
And thank you, Jane Hightower, who is a San Francisco physician, internal medicine, and author of Diagnosis, Mercury, Money, Politics, and Poison. Appreciate
thank you very much.
And appreciate you, our listeners. In fact, we're here with you every Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. Dave Iverson will be with you on tomorrow. Want to also remind you, you can let us know what you think about what you hear on Forum or make suggestions about what you'd like to hear by emailing us forum@kqed.org or calling 415-553-3300. Thanks to our senior editor, Dan Zoll, to our producers, Kevin Guillory and Tina Lauerberg, with production assistance from Amanda Stupai, and our interns, Crystal Davis, Will Duke, Kylie Gordon, Diana Kwok, Sophia Salazar-Rubio. Dave Freeman is our engineer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.